So, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming out. Kind of a nice, warm evening. And I understand tomorrow summer arrives suddenly for a few days at least. We'll be enjoying some sunshine, some warm weather, and I'm sure there'll be all kinds of plants and flowers suddenly popping forth. Well, we just finished a series given by Joko Clare on one of the old teachings of the Buddha on meditation practices. And I really enjoyed it. I'm really grateful that she was willing to take that on. And I believe next week Kate will start another series on the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, one of the chants that we do on occasion, usually in retreats. A bit of a long and a rather, at least at first glance, pretty dense to try to figure out what it's all about. So I was thinking, well, what will I talk about this week, this kind of in-between time? And I was thinking a lot about gifts. I'm not quite sure all the reasons why. Part of it was I was reading an article about a young man who had a gift of kind of incredible intelligence. And basically remembered everything he read. And he ended up going to Yale's university. But he also, in his later years, developed schizophrenia. So I was just reading about him. Reading about, you know, the gifts that we are given. You know, those kind of great gifts. You know, our intelligence, our personality. And along with what we conventionally call gifts, there's also the things that we don't want, those non-gifts, those anti-gifts. I don't know if anyone has read the book, The Emperor of All Maladies, The Cancer, by the writer Siddhartha Mukherjee. Anyone read that? Just kind of. It's a whopping tome. I don't recommend reading it unless you're kind of interested in the history of cancer. You've kind of followed the kind of story of cancer as we've understood it all the way from the early Greeks all the way up to the present. At any rate, the reason I just kind of mentioned that is that towards the end of the book, he brings forward, you know, what may be called an anti-gift, you know, along with the gifts that we're given. And it's called an oncogene. And there's something called a proto-oncogene that regulates cell division, like controls it. And then somehow that gets, through various ways, mutated, and it becomes the gene that actually causes the rapid multiplication of cells. So that's kind of, they realize now they finally got to what the source of cancer is. So gifts and anti-gifts. But let's not go there tonight. Actually, what I really want to talk about is more conventional idea of gifts. I was remembering, you know, as a child, the kind of excitement of Christmas gifts. You know, I grew up in a pretty traditional Christian Protestant family. And in our household, the Christmas tree was set up on the early side and decorated. And gifts would be wrapped and then gradually, you know, placed under the tree, starting about a week and a half or so before Christmas. So we could enjoy the pretty wrappings. And my wise parents figured, well, that the three sons would not kind of like seek out the gifts ahead of time. You know, peeking in the closets and things when your parents are away, that's what I would do. Anyway, but as a young child, I would sometimes prowl under the Christmas tree looking at name tags and trying to guess, you know, what was inside, listening to what the package may contain. And I think, like most child, you know, gifts were about me. At least mostly, right? Did I get what I want? And will I get what I want? But at the same time, you know, I also wanted my gifts that I was giving to other people to bring happiness. And although in our family we didn't have much money at the best of times and very little money after my father died, I always tried to get gifts that others would appreciate. And it's funny, you know, I was thinking about this, I don't remember anything about birthday gifts. In our family, they were far less important. Gifts. You know, I wonder about your family. Do you remember your childhood feelings? Attitudes about giving a gift, receiving a gift? Was there a special time each year, a celebration, that was marked with gifting? And how about now? Your feeling of gifting or receiving? I suppose what really prompted me to kind of consider this a little bit was, as I think almost everyone here knows, our community has been gifted a house recently. And the magnitude and unexpectedness of that gift is, you know, deeply moving. Deeply moving. So what is a gift? I suppose there are many ways to look at it, but I think we could say gifts are outside the usual commerce, trade, and exchange that fills so much of our life. It's true, some gifts are expected, like on birthdays, but I think when we stop and open up to this idea of gifts, most gifts just come. And what I mean by that, there are times when gifts are expected and when they suddenly appear before us. When Kate and I lived in Kyoto, sometimes we would hear the ringing of the great temple bell, these huge bells that, you know, 6 feet kind of tall, great cast bells that would be rung at times in temples, and particularly around the New Year. But sometimes just you would just hear it. And the ringing passes through your body, such a deep, resonant sound. And it was a gift that always returned me to the present moment. Always brought me back to the body to hear the temple bell. And at our home in Mission, we have a hummingbird feeder just outside the window where we eat breakfast. And these days we usually see one or two hummingbirds almost every morning. The most beautiful, surely, of all wrapped gifts is a hummingbird. And while we do look for them in the morning and almost expect them, I noticed they just suddenly appear at the feeder. I don't hear the sound very well anymore, but Kate does. And our cats do, especially our little kitten. She's up on the table looking. So they are, in a way, an unexpected gift, like a surprise phone call from a dear friend that you haven't seen for a long time. I think all gifts, really, true gifts, are free and open. When I first realized that this gift of the house was going to materialize, was actually going to happen, because there was a long time where I had my doubts, and there were a lot of kind of hills and obstacles to overcome, I asked myself, what did we do to deserve this? Were we just good Zen students? Did we take the precepts to heart enough and practice them enough? Was this the result of good past deeds by the community? Or maybe just a few people in the community create such merit that the house came to us. But it quickly became clear that although many people in our Sangha did do and continue to do good deeds, honor the precepts, work for the benefit of others, it really is not and never has been a question of deserving or not deserving. If you have been to a mountain rain residential retreat, you know that we do odyoki, or formal eating of the eating with three bowls in a formal way, with chants before and after the meal. And in the meal chant is the line that goes, may we with all beings realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. These words remind us that the meal before us has not been earned or paid for in any conventional sense. It is not part of our usual involvement with commerce, trade, and exchange that I mentioned before. It's not part of the capitalist system that we are woven into. It is a gift. But it's not like the kind of gift I understood as a child. This gift or giving is not one done so that the giver or receiver will feel better. Not an act or thing so that we feel good, oh, got it right. I got the right present for him, for her, for him. It's not that at all. And it has nothing to do with feeling worthy or unworthy. It is true, like the penetrating sound of a temple bell or the sight of a hummingbird, free and open. May we with all beings realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. In a residential retreat, in session, we are reminded at each of the major meals there are no separate givers, receivers, or gifts. Just interbeing, to use Thich Nhat Hanh's phrase. There is only interbeing. I don't know about you, but I have often found receiving a gift is not easy. Perhaps you might find yourself saying things, well, I couldn't possibly accept this. That's very kind, but, right? It's polite to refuse, right? Sometimes. Oh, no, it's too much. I'll take half. I'll take half. Or if you don't kind of automatically say something like this, maybe you may feel a little uneasy about the gift, right? in that very moment of kind of taking it in hand, whatever it is, there is a little bit of anxiety of how to kind of repay the gift. As if you had bought something that you can't quite afford. Feeling kind of the heaviness, perhaps, of the obligation. And there are reasons that we may feel this way sometimes. Sometimes we are manipulated with gifts. That's important to acknowledge and be aware of. But if we have this habitual response, it blinds us to the true qualities of the gift and the act of giving. Quite a number of years ago now, Kate and I participated in a pilgrimage to Hiroshima and Nagasaki in commemoration of the 60th anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bombs. And the group that we were in were mostly Americans. Generally, most of them were affiliated directly or indirectly with Great Vow Monastery, a Zen monastery in Oregon, just across the border from Washington. And one day, a small group of us were in Hiroshima Peace Park, Memorial Peace Park, a park that was created in memory of the victims of the nuclear attack on August 6th in 1945. And the park itself is very moving. It's built on an open field that was created by the explosion, by the atomic bomb itself. And today there are a number of memorials and monuments, museums, some of them deeply moving. Anyway, among us, the little group, there were several monks or priests, and we carried signs letting other people know who we were and where we were from. And one elderly Japanese woman came up to the group and said she would like to make a donation. And she was very simply dressed and old enough, I thought, that she probably was a very young girl at the time of the bombing. So opening up her purse, she pulled out a 10,000 yen note, which at that time was probably worth about $100. Maybe a little bit more in Canadian. Anyway, and she gave it to one of the group. And then she very shyly asked for some change so she could take the bus home. Oh. And the person who received that 10,000 yen note was a young American priest. And he immediately tried to give the 10,000 note back to her. And I remember I was a little bit far away. Well, not directly. I couldn't exactly hear what was being said at that moment. But I could see she looked a little confused. And it's true, she looked like she didn't have much money, just judging from what she was wearing. And she was clearly befuddled, though. Here was someone trying to give back her donation. And then in the group, another priest who spoke very good Japanese stepped in. And he said what I found to be very moving and very helpful in my life. In his own training in Japan, he was American, he had been scolded at one time for trying to return a donation in some kind of similar circumstance. And he was told in very strong language that donations or dana were not for him, or even really for the temple, but for something more vast. We might say for the Dharma. A monk cannot refuse a donation, small or large, unless they are pretty certain it would be harmful in some way. So I couldn't hear the whole conversation between the woman and the Japanese-speaking American priest. But in the end, she was given about 1,000 or 2,000 yen back. In other words, $10 to $20 back, so she could easily take the bus, and deeply thanked for her donation. And over the years since then, I have reflected on how hard it is for many of us to receive a gift, and how the initial reaction may be to refuse. And in that act or reactive refusal, something precious can be lost. May we, with all beings, realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. I think in most cases, not only is it graceful, but healing to simply say, "Oh, thank you. That's very kind." In our practice, we need to ask, who or what is the giver? Who receives? What is the gift? And remember that, after all, life is always giving and receiving at every moment. So we often talk about mindfulness. And it's very important to be mindful of the gifts. Those gifts that we receive, that we immediately recognize as gifts. But also the gifts we usually don't see as gifts. Maybe the beauty of a spring bud as we're walking down the street, or the sound of the rain,